Chapter 17. Knocks me over again. He sighed. There was no reproach in his tone, but the bare words were enough to give me a horrible pang of self-reproach. It held me dumb for a time. When the tormenting sensation had passed off, I asked, "Do you feel strong enough to prevent the Rudder taking charge if she gets stern way on her? It wouldn't do to get something smashed about the steering gear now. We've enough difficulties to cope with as it is." He answered with just a shade of weariness that he was strong enough to hang on. He could promise me that she shouldn't take the wheel out of his hands. More he couldn't say. At that moment, Ransom appeared quite close to me, stepping out of the darkness into visibility suddenly, as if just created with his composed face and pleasant voice. "Every rope on deck," he said, "was laid down clear for running, as far as one could make certain by feeling. It was impossible to see anything. Frenchy had stationed himself forward. He said he had a jump or two left in him yet." Here a faint smile altered for an instant the clear, firm design of Ransom's lips. With his serious, clear, gray eyes, his serene temperament, he was a priceless man altogether. Soul as firm as the muscles of his body. He was the only man on board, except me, but I had to preserve my liberty of movement, who had a sufficiency of muscular strength to trust to. For a moment I thought I had better ask him to take the wheel. But the dreadful knowledge of the enemy he had to carry about him made me hesitate. In my ignorance of physiology, it occurred to me that he might die suddenly, from excitement, at a critical moment. While this gruesome fear restrained the ready words on the tip of my tongue, Ransom stepped back two paces and vanished from my sight. At once an uneasiness possessed me, as if some support had been withdrawn. I moved forward too, outside the circle of light, into the darkness that stood in front of me like a wall. In one stride I penetrated it. Such must have been the darkness before creation. It had closed behind me. I knew I was invisible to the man at the helm. Neither could I see anything. He was alone, I was alone, every man was alone where he stood. And every form was gone too, spar, sail, fittings, rails, everything was blotted out in the dreadful smoothness of that absolute night. A flash of lightning would have been a relief, I mean physically. I would have prayed for it, if it hadn't been for my shrinking apprehension of the thunder. In the tension of silence I was suffering from, it seemed to me that the first crash must turn me into dust. And thunder was, most likely, what would happen next. Stiff all over and hardly breathing, I waited with a horribly strained expectation. Nothing happened. It was maddening, but a dull, growing ache in the lower part of my face made me aware that I had been grinding my teeth madly enough for God knows how long. It's extraordinary I should not have heard myself doing it, but I hadn't. By an effort which absorbed all my faculties, I managed to keep my jaw still. It required much attention, and while thus engaged I became bothered by curious, irregular sounds of faint tapping on the deck. They could be heard single, in pairs, in groups. While I wondered at this mysterious devilry, I received a slight blow under the left eye, and felt an inner mouse tear run down my cheek. Raindrops. Enormous. Forerunners of something. Tap. 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 Dot dot, I turned about, and, addressing Gambrel earnestly, entreated him to hang on to the wheel. But I could hardly speak from emotion. The fatal moment had come. I held my breath. The tapping had stopped as unexpectedly as it had begun, and there was a renewed moment of intolerable suspense, something like an additional turn of the racking screw. I don't suppose I would have ever screamed, but I remember my conviction that there was nothing else for it but to scream. Suddenly, how am I to convey it? Well, suddenly the darkness turned into water. This is the only suitable figure. A heavy shower, a downpour, comes along, making a noise. You hear its approach on the sea, in the air too, I verily believe. But this was different. With no preliminary whisper or rustle, without a splash, and even without the ghost of impact, I became instantaneously soaked to the skin. Not a very difficult matter, since I was wearing only my sleeping suit. My hair got full of water in an instant. Water streamed on my skin, it filled my nose, my ears, my eyes. In a fraction of a second I swallowed quite a lot of it. As to Gambrel, he was fairly choked. He coughed pitifully, the broken cough of a sick man, and I beheld him as one sees a fish in an aquarium by the light of an electric bulb, an elusive, phosphorescent shape. Only he did not glide away. But something else happened. Both binnacle lamps went out. I suppose the water forced itself into them, though I wouldn't have thought that possible, for they fitted into the cowl perfectly. The last gleam of light in the universe had gone, pursued by a low exclamation of dismay from Gambrel. I groped for him, and seized his arm. How startlingly wasted it was. "Never mind," I said. "You don't want the light. All you need to do is to keep the wind, when it comes, at the back of your head. You understand?"
"Aye, sir."
But I should like to have a light," he added nervously. All that time the ship lay as steady as a rock. The noise of the water pouring off the sails and spars, flowing over the break of the poop, had stopped short. The poop scuppers gurgled and sobbed for a little while longer, and then perfect silence, joined to perfect immobility, proclaimed the yet unbroken spell of our helplessness, poised on the edge of some violent issue, lurking in the dark. I started forward restlessly. I did not need my sight to pace the poop of my ill-starred first command with perfect assurance. Every square foot of her decks was impressed indelibly on my brain, to the very grain and nuts of the planks. Yet, all of a sudden, I fell clean over something, landing full length on my hands and face. It was something big and alive. Not a dog, more like a sheep, rather. But there were no animals in the ship. How could an animal? It was an added and fantastic horror which I could not resist. The hair of my head stirred even as I picked myself up, awfully scared. Not as a man is scared while his judgment, his reason still try to resist, but completely, boundlessly, and, as it were, innocently scared like a little child. I could see it, that thing. The darkness, of which so much had just turned into water, had thinned down a little. There it was. But I did not hit upon the notion of Mr. Burns issuing out of the companion on all fours till he attempted to stand up, and even then the idea of a bear crossed my mind first. He growled like one when I seized him round the body. He had buttoned himself up into an inner mouse winter overcoat of some woolly material, the weight of which was too much for his reduced state. I could hardly feel the incredibly thin lath of his body, lost within the thick stuff, but his growl had depth and substance. Confound the dumb ship with a craven, tiptoeing crowd. Why couldn't they stamp and go with a brace? Wasn't there one godforsaken lubber in the lot fit to raise a yell on the rope? "Skulking's no good, sir," he attacked me directly. "Who can't slink past the old murderous ruffian? It isn't the way. You must go for him boldly as I did. Boldness is what you want. Show him that you don't care for any of his damn tricks. Kick up a jolly old row." "Good God, Mr. Burns," I said angrily. "What on earth are you up to? What do you mean by coming up on deck in this state?" "Just that. Boldness. The only way to scare the old bullying rascal." I pushed him, still growling, against the rail. "Hold on to it," I said roughly. I did not know what to do with him. I left him in a hurry, to go to Gambrel, who had called faintly that he believed there was some wind aloft. Indeed, my own ears had caught a feeble flutter of wet canvas, high up overhead, the jingle of a slack chain sheet. These were eerie, disturbing, alarming sounds in the dead stillness of the air around me. All the instances I had heard of topmasts being whipped out of a ship, while there was not wind enough on her deck to blow out a match, rushed into my memory. I can't see the upper sails, sir, declared Gambrel shakily. Don't move the helm. You'll be all right, I said confidently. The poor man's nerves were gone. Mine were not in much better case. It was the moment of breaking strain, and was relieved by the abrupt sensation of the ship moving forward, as if of herself under my feet. I heard plainly the soughing of the wind aloft, the low cracks of the upper spars taking the strain, long before I could feel the least draft on my face turned aft, anxious and sightless like the face of a blind man. Suddenly a louder sounding note filled our ears, the darkness started streaming against our bodies, chilling them exceedingly. Both of us, Gambrel and I, shivered violently in our clinging, soaked garments of thin cotton. I said to him, "You are all right now, my man. All you've got to do is to keep the wind at the back of your head. Surely you are up to that. A child could steer this ship in smooth water." He muttered, "Cole and I, a healthy child." And I felt ashamed of having been passed over by the fever which had been preying on every man's strength but mine, in order that my remorse might be the more bitter, the feeling of unworthiness more poignant, and the sense of responsibility heavier to bear. The ship had gathered great way on her almost at once on the calm water. I felt her slipping through it with no other noise but a mysterious rustle alongside. Otherwise, as he had no motion at all, neither lift nor roll. It was a disheartening steadiness which had lasted for 18 days now, for never, never had we had wind enough in that time to raise the slightest run of the sea. The breeze freshened suddenly. I thought it was high time to get Mr. Burns off the deck. He worried me. I looked upon him as a lunatic who would be very likely to start roaming over the ship, and break a limb or fall overboard. I was truly glad to find he had remained holding on where I had left him, sensibly enough. He was, however, muttering to himself ominously. This was discouraging. I remarked in a matter-of-fact tone. We have never had so much wind as this since we left the roads. There's some heart in it too, he growled judiciously. It was a remark of a perfectly sane seaman. But he added immediately, Colin, it was about time I should come on deck. I've been nursing my strength for this, just for this. Do you see it, sir? I said I did, and proceeded to hint that it would be advisable for him to go below now, and take a rest. His answer was an indignant, oh, below. Not if I know it, sir. Very cheerful. He was a horrible nuisance. And all at once he started to argue. I could feel his crazy excitement in the dark. You don't know how to go about it, sir. How could you? All this whispering and tiptoeing is no good. You can't hope to slink past a cunning, wide-awake, evil brute like he was. You never heard him talk. Enough to make your hair stand on end. No. No. He wasn't mad. He was no more mad than I am. He was just downright. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.